Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3 and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches,
as well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to episode 150 of the Sunday Podcast. Matt and I just wanted to give our thanks to everyone who's listened to any one of the episodes so far, as we couldn't have got this far without you. Please enjoy this episode. None other than Josh Kerr. He needs no introduction, so enjoy that. And I think a perfect guest to celebrate 150 episodes. Enjoy.
Okay, Josh Kerr, 1500 meter world champion. I'm sure you're not bored of that yet. It's been, I guess, welcome back to the podcast. It's been 100 episodes since we last had you on. And yeah, world champion now. How does it feel?
Yeah, it feels amazing. Thanks for having me back. I think I had to put a performance together that allowed me back on the podcast. You know, I had to be a silver or a gold, to be honest, just to elevate where I was before. But no, it feels awesome. What life's been a bit crazier since then, and lots of fun opportunities coming my way. And then it's just kind of, you know, picking through what I think is worthwhile and what I think maybe takes a little bit too much away from training. And that's a new challenge in itself. But overall, having that title is a lifelong dream. So yeah, I'm pretty pumped still.
Mate, that's an interesting take already. Just saying, you know, picking through all the media and stuff you've had to do and all the bits and bobs. You just mentioned off air how you celebrated with Brooks, which is obviously very worthwhile. But yeah, you kind of, is your phone blowing up all the time? Are you being pulled left, right, and center? Is it hard to turn down stuff, or the true professional when you find it easy?
Yeah, I think, for me, the biggest thing, especially it was the same after the Olympics, had a bit of a dry run with things. It wasn't, I didn't win, so it wasn't quite as big, but you can be dragged away from what's most important in this sport very easily. And that's like being consistent with your training, being consistent with your recovery, and just making sure you're in good shape. Because if I go out there in January, February time, whenever I open my season and run terribly, then the hype's kind of gone. But if I can just run this train where, I've gotten to this level and I feel like I can elevate from where I'm at, I think there's definitely places I could get better. Then it just continues why, this journey of excitement of like, I am very excited to be in this position, but I want to be here. I want to be competing for Olympic gold next year. I want to be competing and trying to hold my title in 2025. So it's just the start of a journey. And there's lots of things that, my weeks have been extremely busy in comparison to normal. But the good thing about it is like training always comes first. And I never like schedule media or any opportunity around instead of going training first, or then we'll do the media. So it works out quite well, but you never know what comes your way. It's been pretty easy so far.
For sure. Let's chat about the day itself and the race itself, of course. But was that day, did it feel any different to any other day before you kind of stepped on the start line, before you finished? Did you do anything different to your normal routine, or was it business as usual?
I'm very similar at champs. I had a very good feeling going in, and I was trying to explain to some of my Brooks teammates that even though you're in the best shape of your life, and even though you've done all the sacrifices, you've done the 1% and stuff, you're not owed anything from this championships. Like, you go in the same as everyone else goes in, and you could fall, you could have a bad night's sleep, you could have food poisoning, your shoelace could be undone, and you could just have a bad day. So when you're in a position where you're in really good shape, you can just push it more. And so, sorry, boys. Are we still on?
You're good, man.
Oh, okay, there you go. I'm fine. Yeah, I need to find it. Oh, there we go. Sorry. So the big thing for me was always like, I've been in these championships before. and I need to just send it. And so it was a very calming feeling, to be honest, because you, when you go in with no issues, like with no injuries, and I had a good season coming in, it wasn't like a perfect season, but it was perfect in the way that we had set it up. And I was like, everything is right. And this is my big chance. And if I don't win this, I'm going to have a really tough time winning one of these, because it's tough to think of more of a perfect scenario for me in terms of, it's one of the best fields that the 1500 has ever had. And I'm in the best shape I've ever had, I've been in, and I feel great through the round. So it was one of those calming feelings, like it's kind of now or never. Because that's just the way of our sport. Like, you know, you're not always going to be in those positions. You can't ever take those for granted. And if I didn't win, or at least do myself proud, it would have been my mental issue. It wouldn't have been anything else. So that was the big thing. It's like, pressure's on, do your job. And I enjoyed that part of this process.
But I mean, man, at your level, so much of it just seems like it comes down to mentality, especially when we were looking at the margin throughout the season, you know, between all of you 1500 guys. Was there, it sounds like, you know, I was going to say, was there a difference to how you went into this race compared to Tokyo when you got the bronze there? But it sounds like, to be honest, you were just more confident going into this one because you had better preparation. Is that fair to say? Like, in Tokyo, did you have doubts? You know, were you even thinking about the gold in Tokyo? Obviously, you would have been a little bit, but.
Yeah, I think I almost got through, and I got thrown into being one of the best ranked guys in Tokyo, where I'd never done that before. You know, in 17, I got knocked out in the first round. 19, I was six, and I was almost happy with that. It was a big jump forward. And then in 2021, it was like I raced a couple times. It went really well. And I was like, I think some, I don't know if it was like a flow track thing or Athletics Weekly thing came out and ranked some of the best 1500 runners. And I was like in the top three or four. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't even think people noticed me, kind of thing, you know? And then when, you know, you get the training right and, you know, everything's going well in the preparation, you're like, well, I can really have a solid go at this. But I was still felt like I was a step behind, because we got roasted in 2019 by Chariot. Like, we were in two different stratospheres. And so to then be in 2021 and go after a medal, it's a completely different mindset to go after a medal than it is to go out and win. It's a different atmosphere through the rounds. It's a different atmosphere just overall, generally in camp. And, you know, we did a month in Albuquerque before I came over to the holding camp that British Athletics put on. And it was like, it was a fight camp, man. And it was like a world championship camp. Like, that was the mindset starter. It was like, that's where I really lock in the sacrifices. And everyone says that I'm a confident person, and I am, but it takes a whole different mindset to try and win worlds. It was more of like, you need to be so confident that you don't need to outwardly show it, that you just need to inwardly feel it. And that's what I felt like I had it better at this worlds than I have before.
Mm. Yeah, obviously there was one athlete kind of outwardly showing some confidence in the heats. With Jakob kind of throwing the arms up a bit. Did you take much notice of that? Like, did that make you feel a certain way?
Yeah, it did. And I think that's the British part of me. And I think that's why, like, a lot of Brits got behind it, is like, no one loves to see that in terms of, if you're a proper fan of the sport, because it doesn't mean, like, a semi-final doesn't mean anything if you're going after like a gold or a medal or whatever. And so there was just a couple of things that I was just like, you know, first of all, I watched his whole race because I was at the front and I was looking at the screens, and I ran a fantastic semifinal and he ran a terrible semifinal. But he knew that, I just think he's a very big attention seeker. And so, you know, he had to do something to kind of switch the attention back on him. And, you know, he's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever, but you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention. The same thing, he did it, I think, in the 5K heats after Wyman beat him last year. And it's just like, it just shows, like, he needs to be talked about. He needs to do this, that. But I don't really care. I think it was just, I don't know. It's one of those things that I haven't thought about for a little bit. But it's funny. It is funny to think back to those moments in the semifinals Yeah, he was pretty pissed after that final, for sure.
So I take it there's no friendship there, mate.
I tell you what, I didn't think there was back after World Champs in 2022, but you know, we've had some good conversations, Sam Ritz. You know, I think he's always there to lend his opinion on someone else's training in Sam Ritz. And so he had a good conversation with Hayward there. And I tried to him, and he chatted to me before the medal ceremony and stuff. But I don't know. I think there's always going to be a barrier between us, and it doesn't matter if, you know, we're best friends or not. Like, there's, I have a respect for how difficult his job is, and I don't think he thinks about anyone but himself. But I think he should have a massive respect to what I've just done. But he doesn't show that outwardly, and I think that's where that barrier is mostly for me. Is, you know, I've been taught I'm not win at all costs. I've never been win at all costs, because I think that can then blur some lines with our sport. And so for me, it's like, I know I'm going to lose at some point through this journey of becoming a world champion or an Olympic champion, whatever. And I'm going to lose gracefully. And I think that's something that he hasn't quite grasped yet.
Mm. Do you think it's good for the sport? Because it's something me and Matt discussed loads, in that we quite enjoy it. I think particularly when a Brit comes out on top, like yourself and Jake did. But I think, yeah, in many ways, we think it's good for the sport. But I guess for yourself, it's a different story, because you're on the receiving end sometimes of those conversations, those interviews.
It is good because, you know, the 1500 is always like a blue ribbon event. You know, you got the 100, you got 1500, you got the marathon, I think are kind of the biggest events. And so everyone enjoys watching, everyone enjoys the drama of it. And it does add to the drama of things, which is fine. Everyone can take it in different ways. But I do enjoy that being a bit more exciting than just kind of boring rounds. But yeah, it's weird being on the inside of things. And I think what we've shown in the UK over the past, even the past like 4 or 5 years, we've just made a huge jump up to be like, this is the level we're on. It's so difficult to make our team. And when you're on our team, you should be making a final. And you should be competing for medals. And I feel like we do that pretty well, you know. And I think that will long continue for as long as myself and Whiteman do our job in terms of giving back and going back to where we started and helping each phase of the transitions for every athlete in Scotland and in the UK, then I don't see why this can't continue for years and years to come.
Which I guess you both do, and you did recently as well. You went back to Edinburgh AC. You must have had a little bit of time at home as well, seeing family and stuff, which is incredible to see, because I think that would be this, you know, something you talk about, weighing up what's important to you, what's worth doing and what's not. I can't imagine there was too much financial gain from doing that.
No, you know, for me, I hadn't planned on going home. I went home after Zurich and before Fifth Ave, and actually worked out really well, because I said to my dad, I was like, my parents came out, and my brother and his fiance and my two nephews obviously weren't able to come out because they were a bit younger, and so I really wanted to see them and then see my grandparents and stuff. And I was like, well, maybe we can link this up with going back to the club and go back to my school and try and create relationships with these people where. And it's the same that I had a little bit as well. It's just all we're doing is bridging the gap. It's like, you know, you see yourself in this position, like, oh, like we hear stories about Jake Whiteman being at Edinburgh C or Josh Kerr being at Edinburgh C, but we're not down at Meadow Bank every week. And it's just like, well, this is what we did. And this was our journey. And you have the same people that helped us do our stuff. And it is bridging that gap between being a world champion and then being in our position 12 years prior. So that's my goal anyway. I haven't really spoken too much to Jake about it, but he's very good at it as well. He always goes back and speaks and things like that, and that's just kind of our job. And it is, you know, of course it's not anything to do with financial gain. It's always about, like, the reason I'm here is because of them, and I need to show respect for that and give my time as much as I can. But yeah, that's always going to be worth it, because they were a fantastic club for me.
Yeah, it's brilliant to see, and it's still baffling that one club has produced kind of two world champions in the past two iterations. And brilliant for Scottish athletics, brilliant for British athletics as well. We've managed to so far avoid kind of the actual race and the tactics going into it, so let's get our teeth stuck into that, because it was definitely one that I think everyone watching was getting excited by, particularly when you pulled up on Jakob and stayed on his shoulder round the bend. Me and Matt kind of, we spoke about that quite a lot as soon as it happened. But Josh, can you talk to us just, I guess, from gun to tape, how did it feel from your perspective? How did that line up with the plan going into it, you know?
Yeah, it was, it had very similar or similar big similarities to the plan we wanted to play, but it was also very opposite to the plan we wanted to play. Like does very well for people who are nerds and want to analyze 1500s is they do 100 meter splits for all like world champs, and it goes back years and years and years. And I think what Whiteman did very well in 2022 was that he didn't really come out of the top five. He kind of sat near that top five, four-ish, top four group, and he just kind of settled there. So that was the plan, was to like sit in the top five or six and wait a little bit, make a couple moves in specific spots. But that went completely out the window in the first 100. And then I think I was like 10th or 11th through the first 400. And I was like, all I think about in races a lot when I'm making mistakes or something's going on, it's like Danny must be shitting himself right now because this was not the plan. And so, you know, I took a deep breath and just kind of followed where I know that people settle in races, and I know when people push in races. So it was like, okay, let's make a decision when to push when people are settling and then when to settle when people are pushing, so that I could just have a little bit more energy in the last 200. I made a couple of mistakes in there for sure. I didn't run a clean race in any way, but I knew if I trusted the instinct of, you know, I'd been learning a lot over the past kind of 6 months, that I would have a real good go in the last 200. And I was hoping to make my move in the last 100. But when the opportunity arose at 200 and there wasn't really many people around us, it was just like, you're going to regret for the rest of your life if you don't take this opportunity. So just go for it. Even if you have to be out in lane two, I kind of thought that would be what happened because I wasn't going to catch him off guard, but you can't let him, or Ingebrigtsen, this is, you can't let him just dictate the race and relax when he wants to relax, because it's very difficult to beat him over the last 100 when he does exactly what he wants to do over the last 400, because he's very good at it. He's won a lot of races, more races than I have, but I know how to beat people that seem unbeatable because I've done it my whole career. And so it was just putting the pressure on and putting doubt in his mind. And with 110 to go, I was like, if you don't win this, you're gonna hear it pretty bad about being in lane two as well. So I was like, let's send it down this last 100. But yeah, it was just like I think a proud moment for Danny was definitely my sprint mechanics down the last 100. I think I had better mechanics than Ingebrigtsen down the last 100, and I think that's why I won. And so that's just testimony to the coaching as well. But yeah, tactics are a big part of 1500 meter running now, because it's like, it used to be slow and tactical, then it was fast, so there wasn't really many tactics, but now everyone's fast. It's gone back kind of tactical. So it's an interesting transition, but you know, hopefully it continues. And yeah, it was such a fun race to run, and having all the Brooks employees there, you know, my fiance was there and my parents and stuff, so seeing them right after the race was so cool.
Oh man, I bet. I mean, incredible margins as well. But yeah, were you studying Jakob on the Diamond League circuit? I mean, of course you were. Do you wish there was more races which were unpaced? Do you think Jakob would lose more if there was more races, you know, if he did more races that were unpaced? Or do you quite like the fact that, you know what, he has to, you know, he runs a pacemaker all year, and in the one race he doesn't, he's not as strong, you know, he's easier to beat, I guess.
Yeah, I do think people will start realizing that a little bit now, but I don't think he will, because the ego is pretty high on this one. But I do, you know, he was pacemaked in 2021 for his Olympic gold medal by Chariot.
Exactly.
So it's like, if you really look at it, he doesn't win a lot of non-paced races. I would love for him to be listening to this. That was a big part of our training as well, was like, I think there was a question asked to him earlier on in the season of like, are you worried about the world championship not having a pacer and all this stuff? And I think his answer was, when the pacer drops out, I'm the pacemaker. And I was like, oh, you have no idea. Like, you're just, you know, you've won so many races, you've ran fantastic all season, that you're just on this you must be surrounded by so many yes men that you don't realize that you have weaknesses. And I think that was part of his downfall, is like, if he doesn't realize that he's got some real major weaknesses, then he will not win the 1500 meter gold medal next year. And, you know, I'm okay with that. And so, yeah, I think, you know, the 5K is not as popular an event to watch than the 1500. So he wants to win the 1500. That's the only, like, the 5K is just almost like an afterthought for him. And I think he's much better at the 5K than he is at the 15, which is crazy to say because he's ran so fast in the 15. But yeah, I think if he wants to try and really compete to win next year, he's going to have to change some things up.
Yeah. And one thing you did as part of your preparation, which I guess surprised some people, not some others. And we spoke to you straight after the race at British Champs where you ran the 800. And fair to say, you got it taken to you by the British boys. And I think that really showed the strength on the British scene as well, but clearly paid off for you in terms of your preparation. Can you talk us again through kind of the thoughts behind that? And I guess the other stuff that you were thinking about ahead of the World Champs.
Yeah, those 800 boys run so bad all year. I was ripping into them at the Worlds. I was like, it takes a 1500 guy to come into your race for you guys to start racing well. I thought I was going to walk that 8, to be fair. No, it was, I mean, I don't think I've ever raced Max Bergen before, and that guy is unbelievable. His wheels are insane. So yeah, it was a great challenge. I think, you know, I'd been in close contact with British Athletics all season and just kind of said, look, we think this is the best preparation for Worlds. If you're on board with it, then, you know, that would be amazing. But we understand that, you know, if you need me in the 1500 and prove myself, that's completely fine. Because it was written into the, like, selection criteria. And they were like, look, if it wasn't the 1500, then we can make that decision now. But because it's the 15, you're gonna have to show form and you're going to have to pretty much not lose to any Brits. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And so I went and ran 3:30 in Oslo. And then I went back to them. I was like, is that enough? And they were like, no, we're going to need one more. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And then I ran 3:29. And then I was like, we good? And then Steve was like, yeah, that's fine. But I understand it. Look, it's a hard team to make. And my biggest thing is always, I'm not trying to cheat the system. I'm just trying to get medals for Team GB and for Great Britain. So, and they understand that as well. And I think it'll be an interesting one this year because it's the same criteria and you've got pretty much two current world champions coming in. But again, the preparation went well. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of long conversations and we're going to have some real killers on the Olympic start line for the UK. But the preparation went well. I think there's just an element of not having to, I think the Spanish showed this really well. Those Spanish trials were so hard and two of their, you know, best three guys get knocked out in the semifinal. And, you know, Mokasir is a 3:28 guy and gets knocked out in the semifinal. And yeah, I think there is a, you can definitely touch on that part of if your trials are super difficult, like normally you don't compete as well at the major. And that's a part of what we're dealing with as a country as well, as like the growing pains of we're actually really good and trials are becoming very difficult. So we need to think about the timing a bit better. But yeah, no, it's, I wouldn't say things went perfectly, but things were in a really good spot in that kind of 6 week window beforehand where I was like, okay, let's work on some fun things. And we thought maybe we'd overshot it by like a week. I was pretty fit like the week prior to Worlds, but it went pretty well, obviously at Worlds, and I felt great through the round. So can't really complain there, to be honest.
I mean, that's an interesting point you make about, you know, the trials. I feel like the US have always been in that dilemma, right? It's so hard to make their team that they do underperform a little bit come Worlds, especially in the distance races. And they, you know, they have heats in the 5K and stuff like that. So yeah, you're right. It is getting harder and harder to qualify, which might take off that edge come the big one. But you know, I was going to say, what did you learn? Because 2022 was a funny year for you. And obviously bouncing off of Tokyo. Talk about that a little bit. Did you have a few injuries? And then what did you change from 2022 going into this year to make sure you got it right?
Yeah, I think the best way to explain my 2022 is I deserved exactly what I got.
Right.
My fall wasn't good. I was very distracted. I was doing a lot of media stuff. I was doing a lot of stuff with Brooks. I was flying all over the place doing adverts, and I just kind of lost my love for the sport a little bit in the fall. And just was like, well, you know, I'd kind of done a big goal of mine, and I was like, well, this is going to be a real tough journey to get back. But you know, it's now in a world champs and not an Olympics, and so it was a weird process. And then that kind of bleeds into January, February time. And then yeah, picked up a couple injuries, but I pulled it together pretty well. Coming into world champs for sure. But like you could see at trials as well. Like I just wasn't like those guys, like Whiteman, Gurley, even Hayward, they were just better than me. Because I just hadn't put the work in, and I deserved to get my ass kicked a little bit. And I scraped together that world champs pretty well. I think I did myself actually pretty proud. Considering I think I came in and I ran like 147.2 like a week prior to like tune up for Worlds, and I was like, we're all looking at each other like, damn, this could go horribly. And felt great. That's why I was so excitable in the rounds, because I was just like, there's no way I feel this good, this is crazy. And then you know, I'm just obviously talking a lot of rubbish in the interviews and stuff like that, and then just watching Whiteman dominate all year, and then it was just so mature through the rounds, and then just ran very maturely through that final, and just was the best guy there. And so yeah, I watched that, and I watched the way that he kind of went through the rounds and stuff, and I learned a lot from him. I learned a lot from him throughout his whole career, even back to European juniors. Like I think, you know, Mark Pollard, my coach at the time, was talking to Jeff about how to win world junior or sorry Euro juniors, and because Whiteman had won that previously. So yeah, I'd been following his footsteps for a while, so this is definitely the biggest you know, duel that we've done in our careers. But things just didn't go my way in 2022, but I don't feel like I deserved them to go my way, so I'm kind of to blame on that. But it was very motivating. I went into the fall in 2022 very motivated, being like, listen, like this is just not up to scratch. I'm turning down all these like I'm gonna have to turn down all these opportunities and media things, and I'm gonna focus on the running, because guess what, it's just like, you know, yes, the Olympic Games are like only every 4 years and that's so exciting, but who cares if you're not competing at that high level? And I think that's why I'm very motivated now, is because if I'm fifth at the Olympics next year, that's just that would be such a disappointment for me. And you know, I'm in the peak of my career now. I just turned 26, and I feel like it's time now to hold that, you know, those gold medals for the UK. And I think that's my turn to do that. And I'm going to be competing against some fantastic Brits and some fantastic Europeans and East Africans and everything. So it will be a great season ahead, but I'm motivated to never go back to that place of, just being down in the dumps, really. Just being a bit of a loser.
I can't imagine you, you know, seeing out your career as a journeyman. Then, you know, when Josh Kerr's done, he's done.
Yeah, I'm done, man. We'll see though. We'll see. See what comes my way. I might be a marathoner by the end of next Olympic cycle.
Yeah, well, it's obviously a mouth-watering prospect to have both yourself and Jake Whiteman around for Paris next year, and maybe no one will be even talking about Jakob with you two kind of on the head-to-head. But yeah, it's one thing that kind of came out from the kind of the aftermath of the World Champs was your preparation. I know you've covered it and you mentioned it almost like a fighting camp, but one thing was saying about your nutrition and kind of your nutritionist cooking every meal for you. Is this something that you think other people doing this on the circuit, or are you taking it to the next level?
I've not heard. I don't know many people who else has a chef. I'm not too sure. I think, yeah, I'm very obsessed with, I do have an obsession with like UFC boxing, like prep camps. And so I've learned a lot from that. And like Danny's like a big jiu-jitsu UFC guy. And so I just kind of pitched this idea. So our nutritionist isn't like on the day to day with the team in terms of like physical location, but we talk, like we have our meetings with him, and we can text and call him whenever. And he's so good. He lives in Oregon, and I just texted him after British Champs and I said, look, I think we can get better at locking down like the nutrition side. And I'm going to bring someone in to cook this stuff. Is there any way you can write the meals? And he was like, yeah, 100%. So he wrote out everything that I put in my mouth for the 4 or 5 weeks prior to the World Champs. And what it allowed me to do, I think people focus on the wrong things in this situation. What it allowed me to do was stay away from injury and illness more than ever. Mm. My body was resilient and my body was fed well. And it was always to the calorie, like, and to the macro, like what I needed. And that's what made me in a really good spot. And the same way, like when people pretend they have, you know, illnesses at a major championships, it's like, well, that's your fault. It's the same as having an injury. Like, you have to have a resilient body. Like, it's just part of that process. And people have illnesses all the time at major championships and you don't hear about them. But when it's someone big enough where they have to have an excuse, that seems to always be the excuse. And like, for me, I was like, I think, you know, I could be in a really good spot to get all these sessions right and get the mileage right and not get too tired, but like really work hard in this camp. And that's what I did. And, you know, I've continued my journey with my chef and she cooks my meals now here in Seattle as well. And that will continue for the rest probably of my career.
Man, I mean, I once read LeBron James invest like £1 million a year in himself. You know, you talk about nutritionists and chefs and all the recovery tools he was using, massage therapists. He reckons it was around about that figure. You're clearly kind of following suit, doing a lot of 1% yourself. Could you put a financial figure? Is it even possible on kind of how much you invest in yourself each year to, you know, to become a world champion? Or is it, that might be too hard to do, but just a rough guess.
I mean, I could give it a go. I think the thing is what Brooks do really well is like the beasts as a team take the hit on the majority of our support staff. So, you know, our athletic trainer, coaching, assistant coach, nutritionist, gym coaches, massage therapists are all kind of under the beasts. And mm-hmm. So it's difficult to put a number on that, but that's got to be, you know, if you're thinking about salaries on that, you know, you're in the six figures there for sure. And then, you know, from my personal point of view of mindfulness coaches and like chef, and then I'm trying to think of like agent stuff and things like that. It's probably, yeah. I mean, we're approaching, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mm. And it takes that. And I think companies are realizing that. And, you know, that's why you get more money when you're better, is you're spending more money. Like, I spend way more money than I did when I first signed this contract, and I make way more money than I first signed this contract. And you know, I'm not taking home as much as people probably think, because I'm spending it all on making sure that my body's in a great spot. And that's the transparency I wish we could have a bit more in our sport, is how much people make and how much people spend. But it's, you know, we all sign these non-disclosures, which sadly don't allow us to talk specifics. But yeah, I think when, you know, I'm very blessed to be with a company that understands what it takes to be really, really good. And it's, yeah, that's just part of the process, I guess.
Yeah, let's talk about Brooks then, because obviously signed with them out of college. And I guess, like you said, you're their first world champion. And what an investment for them. But like, I think we might have spoken about this last time, but I can't remember. And I'm sure people are interested to know, like, why was it that when Brooks came in, that was the one that was like, okay, yeah, these are the ones that these can take me to the very top, you know?
Yeah. So I had, I think, 2.5 years left of eligibility. If you count the COVID year as well, I probably only would have left college like a year ago or 2 years ago. And I've been a professional for 5.5 years. And so, yeah, it's, they went to Albuquerque for training camp, and that's where University of New Mexico is. And, you know, I'd won indoors, and then I'd won outdoors, and then, you know, we were going into the season, and they were in Albuquerque, and I get a call from my coach Joe Franklin. He said, look, Brooks want to have a conversation with you, their sports marketing team and stuff like that. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And back then, you couldn't make any money, so you couldn't hear figures, and you couldn't. There was a lot of very specific rules, but so I had to have a couple of people in the meeting room with me. But before the meeting room, I raced Isaac Yorks and Henry Winn over 800. And I was like, I have to beat these two guys. And the fun part about being in college is you're way fitter than professionals in January. So I spanked them in an 800. And then I went straight into the meeting. And they were like, look, we think you're ready to be a beast. We would love to for you to be part of our company. And we're going to offer you a contract at the end of the season. Pretty much was the gist. And I was like, wow, that's you know, amazing, whatever. So I looked more into the company and I looked into more into Danny, pretty much. What you'll find is with professional teams, it's less about the roster, especially when it's like a newer team or like a less established team. It's less about the actual physical people. It's how maybe they've transitioned into being a professional, and then just more about the coach, because it's for me, it's always about the coach and how they treat their athletes, and you know, if they've ever crossed any lines or if they have any gray area stuff that you need to be aware of. And then as long as it aligns up with the company, that would be a pretty cool deal. So they said, look, we're willing to tell you that it's going to be our biggest offer that we've ever offered someone out of college. And I was like, oh, okay, awesome. And so I took it extremely seriously. And then I went outdoors and ran the NCAA record, and they were there for that. And I actually got sent an email from the head of sports marketing at the time yesterday. And he sent me the email of the presentation that showed my parents in Azusa and the transition of like what they want, what they thought I could be able to achieve each year. And it always ended up being the Paris gold. And obviously I got the bronze in 21, and so I was a bit ahead of the timeline. So he just sent me that email saying, look how close we were of like guessing how good you were going to be, kind of thing. And I think when my parents saw that and they thought, this company is aligning with what we believe our son can achieve. And then that was kind of where it started. And it's just a huge family feel. You know, I'm one of 15 Brooks beasts. I'm probably one of 40 Brooks athletes overall. We're only in running. And so the company is all about the run, and they get it, and they make fantastic products. And so when I was speaking to people as part of the brand, they were like, yeah, it's awesome. We have no reduction clauses. They trust us as athletes. And so whatever you see, the number you see on that contract, it will never go down. It can only go up. And that seemed like financial stability. And I think, you know, when I came out after NCAAs, I came out and I said, look, to all the companies, I'm coming out. And yeah, Brooks handed me that contract. And I was like, that's the, you know, I didn't see any other physical contracts. That was the contract that I wanted. And Danny had done some phenomenal things with athletes, and he'd never been questioned about his integrity. He'd always preached the good parts of this sport and spoken out about the bad stuff that's going on. And I was like, it all aligns and it feels right. And so I'm going to sign it. And I'm still currently on that contract. So yeah, it's good.
Man, that's crazy. I mean, how different could it have been if you signed with someone else? I mean, I was going to ask you, you know, did they tell you at the time, did they believe you were going to be as good as you have been? But it sounds like they did believe. And more than that, they'd done their research. I can't imagine too many brands, if any, who go to an athlete at 20 years, 21 years of age and say, you're going to be this good. We believe in you. We want to do everything we can to help you do that. So it just made sense that you signed that contract.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd heard from some other coaches. They were like almost shocked by some of my performances of being like, oh, you could actually win a medal at the Olympics, or like you could actually make a world final, whatever. And when I heard that, I was like, you just don't get it. Like this has been my journey my whole career. Like I'm going to be the best in the world. That was always my thought process. It's why I'm here. And like, I was never going to take anything short of that. And so for them to come out and say, we think he's going to win Olympic gold, and we're going to take the long approach for it. We're going to be like, we're not going to rush him. Like he's 20. Like I was 20 when I signed, couldn't even go out with the team. You had to be 21 to go out with the team. I wasn't even fucking old enough. And it's like, we're going to take the slow, long approach with it. We'll let you continue doing your education. We're not going to change anything drastic. And we think we can do it. And I was like, dude, I'm sold. Like, I don't care what the money says. Like I'm sold. And you know, they gave me the best deal on paper for sure. You know, I heard about other deals, but I saw nothing physical, and I just it just felt right. There's something that happens with me. It was the same as going to University of New Mexico. It's like, I didn't go and take a visit. I just signed. And I was like, this feels right. And it's the same with Brooks. I didn't come to Seattle. I was like, this feels right. People I'm dealing with, they're straight shooters. And there was definitely a moment in their buildup, because we don't go after 10, 15 athletes. We go after one or two every year. Mm-hmm. And it's very specific because they have to be the right personality, fitting with the team and the brand and everything. And I think I had driven from Eugene after NCAAs to Portland, where my fiance's parents live. And I was meant to be meeting the Brooks people the next day to look over the contract and tell them what I liked and what I didn't like. And they thought it was in Eugene and I thought it was in Portland. And then I had spoken to them a couple of years ago about it. They were like, yeah, we were sitting in Eugene and be like, oh, this has been such a long week. Do we do the drive to Portland now? Like, what happens if he doesn't sign? That would be so annoying. I feel like, cause they'd put like 5 months worth of work into me. Mm-hmm. And so they obviously said it was worth it, but they were like, we were really debating if it was worth it to drive another hour because you had decided you wanted to do this in Portland and not Eugene. But yeah, I mean, I'm not lying about it. Like, I just don't see a company that does things like Brooks do. They just don't. Like, they don't have that specific one-on-one. Like, I'm going to have some really cool things coming out this year with the brand. And they celebrate me so much. And I almost feel sometimes it's too much. I'm like, guys, chill out. It's fine. Like, we're going to do this again. Don't worry about it. But they just have a massive respect for the work that gets put in. And I have a massive respect for the company. And it's a straight shoot company. And I think, I don't know why people are, I wouldn't understand why people aren't like growing up dreaming about being a Brooks Beast now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And you did obviously your bit getting the spikes out after you won and doing your bit for the company there. Let's talk about that relationship with Danny, because you obviously mentioned that was a massive factor in you signing with the Beast in the first place. But how has that evolved over the years? And especially probably, I guess, after the bronze in Tokyo, and then I guess a bit of a down year. So now, how has that evolved in the past couple of years?
It's been great. I think, you know, we brought an assistant coach in, Julian Flores, back in 2020, at the end of 2021, who was one of my college teammates. And so he's one of my best friends. And also, you know, everyone, it just works super well with everyone on the team. And it's so funny because all three of us have completely different personalities. And we never agree on anything. And so I have zero yes men around me. I get roasted constantly. And we're always challenging each other's decisions. So that's why I think it works well, because me and Danny are very different in the way we approach things. He's very analytical in some of all the training, but in the way that he wants me to race in certain ways and how often he wants me to race. And then I am very emotional in the way that I like to race and how much I want to race. And then Julian is just like a kind of good mixture of both, where he normally pushes in where he thinks the right direction is. And so I think that's why it works so well, because I'm not like, me and Danny aren't always on the same page. We're never really on the same page. Like for even race plans, he'd be like, I think you should sit at the back. And I'm like, I want to front run this. And he'd be like, oh, maybe not. Like, maybe we don't do that. And I'll be like, well, why don't I sit in fourth? And he's like, okay, let's do that. So it's kind of a bit like that. And I think that's why we work so well together, because he analyzes and overanalyzes, and then I tell him to chill out, and then we race well. That's pretty much it. And I just love working with him, because he's so passionate about what he does, and he's so passionate about doing things the right way that I think he told me today, he's like, I finally got to a point where I could retire from the sport, because we did something that was so special, and I know we did the right way. But what it's made me do is it's made me hungry for more, and I want to be in the sport for the next 25 years. And I was like, okay, well, that's good. I was like, you can't leave me now. And so, yeah, no, it's so nice working with them, and they're very flexible with me. And I travel around a lot. I have a place in Albuquerque that I like to be out to a lot, and my fiance is currently in Florida. And then obviously, if you tell my parents, I still live in the UK. So I would say I'm over there a little bit. And so I'm always traveling around, but they're always really flexible with me.
Mm. It's interesting, kind of listening to you, it really stands out that that coach athlete relationship is just so key when you get to that higher level, you know. But we do see athletes jump around and manage, you know, without a really strong relationship. So it's interesting to hear both sides. I guess we're drawing to the end of this podcast, man. Are you back training yet? Is that a stupid question?
Yeah, I have been. So Danny's philosophy with things is, and I think it should be a philosophy across the board. If you're listening and you don't do this, like I would have a look at things. You can't ever take too much time away from running, because your body forgets how to run very quickly. And so you'll see the biggest injury rate when you get back into the swing of things. If you take multiple weeks off, like I think I took 10 days completely off running, maybe 2 weeks completely off running. And then I'll run every second day for like 15, 20 minutes, nothing crazy. And it just allows the body to remember, like, this is how we run. And because the body's so stupid, it just forgets. And then you run again, and then you run a different technique, and then you're just injured, and it sucks. So I think I'm 4 weeks in, 5 weeks into mileage. And then we started sessions last week. So this is my second week of sessions. And yeah, I'm in a great spot. And I think the whole team's like, they blamed me a little bit today. We were doing a meeting. They blamed me for my attitude in 2021. Because everyone felt like they had won Olympic bronze and wanted to party and get fat. But now that I've come in with an attitude of like, I want to fucking do damage this year, everyone is super locked in. And so that's how we are as a team, is like, we win together, we lose together. And everyone's just super motivated because they're like, we have this path now that we know will work. So let's just keep pushing on. So yeah, we're a couple of weeks into official practice here in Seattle. We're doing a lot of stuff with the brand, and it's a very exciting time to be a Brooks athlete.
Yeah, one thing we wanted to ask just before we finish, like after the world champs, after getting that win, did it frustrate you at all that there's so many races after world champs?
So frustrating, man. I initially wanted to run pre and run. I had already decided I was going to run Zurich because I hadn't had enough points because I ran Oslo and I got 9th. Even though I ran 3:30, I got 9th, so I got 0 points. And I think I got a call after Worlds and they said, look, we have some like option spots, like we could maybe grab you one of those. And I was like, well, I have a good chance again after the British record here, so I'm just going to send it anyway. And then it didn't obviously end up working out, but I still ran okay. And then at that point, I was fried. Like, it was more the day-to-day media of things and it being important for me to go home and see family and enjoy it. But it's like, what do we do this sport for? You know what I mean? Like, we do it to win a major championships. Like, and it was like either go out and race again to go and try and run a fast mile, or go back to your school, go back to your club, go and speak to, you know, everyone that's helped you along the way and give them the moment that you know, you have. Like, so that was more important to me than going out and running pre. And so I'd already confirmed Fifth Ave, which I love Fifth Ave. It's such a cool event. And I did myself a bit dirty last year. So I wanted to get after that again. So yeah, those are the ones that I'd already confirmed. I'm not someone that kind of goes back on the word a little bit with that. So I decided to do those, and I decided to kind of go back to the UK for a little bit. And that was really nice. So yeah, that pre was just one step too far for me. The body was probably in a really good spot. I probably could have ran really fast, but it just means nothing to me at this point. I'd done everything I needed to do. It was then getting greedy, and that's always a recipe for disaster.
Agreed. I always feel like they should make the champs the last race. Thing as well,
they're thinking about doing that.
Are they actually?
They're thinking about changing it. Yeah, I was speaking to our head of sports marketing, Garrett Heath. I think was in one of the meetings. I don't know if it's a Board of the Flex meeting or something like that, but they were discussing finishing the Diamond League season before Worlds.
They should, because, you know, for me, you know, if you just tune into the sport, you know, you see a Diamond League and you think that person's the best in the world. And, you know, it's frustrating. It's not clear enough. But also for you guys, I just feel like the pinnacle of your season is Worlds. To make you go on after that is just like, you summed it up, man. It's just tiring, just draining.
Yeah, it's the like press conferences. It's like, yeah, all the phone media stuff. And then you're also throwing the travel in, and then you're like, damn, this is a lot. And then I'm meant to be enjoying this moment that I've been working for my whole life. And you're like, well, actually, you can't go and have dinner with your grandparents because you need to be eating this stuff. It's like, fucking come on, man. This is crazy.
Yeah.
But,
well, I guess on that, Josh, we just want to say thanks very much for taking the time to chat to us, because we really appreciate it and wish you all the best for the training and looking forward to seeing you in 2024.
Pleasure, boys. It's, yeah, my pleasure. And thanks for staying up for this long to chat to little old me, man. I'll always be available for you, boys. You've always been there. So I appreciate your time as well. And I'm enjoying listening to the other episodes. Get Whiteman on. I need to learn more about him. Ask him about his training.
Was it, yeah,
get all the 15 guys on. I need to learn more about them.
We need to go back and yeah, maybe we'll do that pre British champs next year. Get them all on.
I'll slip you a little slip you a bit of money for that. That'd be good.